Welcome. It's my pleasure to welcome you on this beautiful fall day. My name is Tim Putra. I'm the board rep this morning. So I'd like to welcome you to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. We have a variety of announcements today, and I'll go through them. It may take a bit. At noon today, following the service, there will be a meeting of the Social Activities Group to plan for activities for this church year, such as dinners in the home, hiking, game nights, etc. See Chris and Sandin. Next week, plan to stay after service next Sunday, October 4th, for a spaghetti lunch. This is a fundraiser for the Children's Religious Education. This is a long one. Stay in your seats. This is another reminder about LCUUC's most successful fundraiser, our silent auction. It will be held on the first three Sundays of October, so that's starting next week. Last year's fundraiser earned $5,400-some for our church. For our newer LCUUC members, the silent auction is an in-house auction where we donate our time, talent, or treasures. They are submitted on an auction form, preferably before the auction begins, although they can also be submitted throughout the auction, but you risk having fewer people and look at them and having fewer bidders. So we will be doing the auction for three Sundays, so that's the October 4th, 11th, and 18th, and you can bid and rebid on these items before and after the service, so the forms will not normally be spread out in the social hall. Auction forms will be available in the social hall after today's service. See Esther Flakis. Also, today, the high school and middle schoolers will be doing a fun morning of engaging team-building activities to create a community of inclusion, cooperation, communications, and trust. If you are a high schooler or middle schooler, please go to that activity now rather than leaving after the story for all ages. This activity will go until noon today. I think most of them have already exited. At this time, I'd like to invite you to greet those around you. What a friendly group. If you're a new visitor or have been here before as a visitor, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger at the visitor's table. There's also a variety of information available out on the table about our church, about Unitarian Universalism, and you can help yourself to whatever interests you. I'll be in the social hall after the service if you have any questions about our church, or if you are visiting, have been visiting for a while and would like information on becoming a member, I'd also be happy to talk to you about that. If you are visiting with children, it is our custom for the children to remain with us until after the offertory, at which time they go to their religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or to remain in the service. If you would like to go along and observe the class, feel free to do that. There's a nursery right across the hall in the foyer, and in case you have a need for child care. If there are any visitors who are comfortable introducing themselves now, this would be a good time. Welcome. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service for refreshments and conversation. At this time, please put your cell phones on silence mode. I hope you find today's service very enjoyable and enlightening. Our speaker today is our own John Kuhn. He will be presenting a service from the Church of the Larger Fellowship.
Very nice. Thank you, choir. As Tim indicated, our service today comes from the Church of the Larger Fellowship, and that's a resource provided by the Unitarian Universalist Association for smaller congregations like ours that can't afford to have a full-time minister. So Our opening words, for anybody who wishes to follow along visually, are actually from our hymnal number 435. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope, is hallowed by our presence together. We've also got a poem here from Billy Collins, and in classical poetry, it was common for a poet to invoke a muse at the beginning of a work, someone or something that inspired the writing. In this case, he invokes us, his readers and audience, not with some classically imposed distance, but as if we're sitting with him at the breakfast table. So it's called A Portrait of the Reader with a Bowl of Cereal. And he starts with a quote from Yeats, a poet never speaks directly as to someone at the breakfast table. So, every morning I sit across from you at the same small table. The sun all over the breakfast things, curve of a blue and white pitcher, a dish of berries, me in a sweatshirt or robe, you invisible. Most days we are suspended over a deep pool of silence. I stare straight through you or look out the window at the garden, the powerful sky, a cloud passing behind a tree. There's no need to pass the toast, the pot of jam, or pour you a cup of tea, and I can hide behind the paper, rotate in the drum of calamitous news. But some days I may notice a little door swinging open in the morning air, and maybe the tea leaves of some dream will be stuck to the china slope of the hour. Then I will lean forward, elbows on the table, with something to tell you, and you will look up, as always, your spoon dripping milk, ready to listen.
I'd like to invite the children to come forward to see the pictures up close for this story for all ages. Good morning. We've got a sort of unusual looking book. It looks like a regular book here this morning, but in fact, it folds open very large. So could I have some help? We'll spread this out so you guys can see the pictures. So come on up. And you can take one end. Can see it. So, this book is called The Greatest Table. It's a banquet to fight against hunger. And it was written and edited by Michael J. Rosen. And he, if you look at the pictures, actually got different artists to do every single page in the book. So you'll notice every page is done by a different artist. And as it says in the table, in the title, they're all drawing pictures of tables. So the book itself makes one big, long table that we're all sitting around now. So you can follow along and look at the pictures as I read. The greatest table isn't set inside a single home. Oh no, it spans the continents, and no one eats alone. The table in your dining room, a picnic bench, a tray, a party tent, your beach blanket, a small sidewalk cafe, a banquet hall, breakfast in bed, a lunchbox, takeout snack, the circle at a campfire roast, or any tea time snack. Each one is just another leaf in one uncommon table, where all the guests have cooked or baked or brought what they are able, where all of us can help ourselves and all of us are fed, and no one has been turned away with just a crust of bread. The greatest table, like a tree, is growing leaf by leaf, and widening its canopy to welcome more beneath. Its tablecloth is flowering and covering all our knees. Its branches bend with every food, from pineapples to peas. Who hasn't eaten? Join us here. Pull up another chair. We'll all scoot over, make more room. There's always some to spare. Baskets mound with crusty breads. There's soup in simmering pots, and bushels brim year-round with fruit. Now pears, now apricots. And always in the company, there's someone we can toast. An elder, infant, long-lost friend, an honored guest, the host. The table talk is musical, with every language shared. In every face, the thankfulness is more than any prayer. The next time you sit down to eat, the greatest table's set, connecting you with each of us who hasn't eaten yet. So if you're hungry, join us here. Pull up another chair. We'll all scoot over. Make more room. There's always room to spare. So now I have a question for you. We're all sitting around this book, which is like a large table. And so the idea is that tables come in lots of different sizes and shapes. So do any of you know if there's a table in this room? Go ahead. It is. The altar is a kind of table. In fact, we light something on it at the beginning of every service, which is called a what?
Chalice.
Right. And a chalice is another name for? Well, it's a cup. A cup. We put a flame in it because we can't all drink out of it at the same time. So, in fact, everybody here around us is sitting around one big table. And if you think about it, are there more than just this one church throughout the world? There are. And those people are all sitting around a table too. And so the idea is that all of these tables are connected. So we're all sitting around the same big table. Thank you very much. We will now join in the singing of hymn 347, Gather the Spirit. Please stand as you are able. this is a time in our service when we collect an offering, and I have these words about an offering that come from Victoria Weinstein. Every week in church, we take up an offering. It's good to remind ourselves from time to time that the offering is symbolic as well as practical. We know that it is through pledges that we build our budget and fund our yearly programs and ministries of worship and religious education, pay our staff and professional religious leaders, and finance the comfort and beauty of our buildings. And we know that we could easily submit those pledge checks to the church at any convenient time. But we pass the plate during our worship service to make a community expression of thanks for the blessing of abundance, to visibly bring in the harvest at this most cherished hour of our week. Our offering says that the act of giving is as essential to our spiritual well-being as anything else we do here on Sunday mornings. The morning offering will now be given and received in the spirit of grateful fellowship. Please join me in responsive reading number 442. I will read the standard print, and the congregation will respond with the print in italics. This is entitled, We Bid You Welcome. We bid you welcome, who come with weary spirit, seeking rest.
Who come with troubles that are too much with you, who hunger and are afraid.
We bid you welcome, who come with hope in your heart, we bid you welcome, who are seekers of a new faith.
Who comes to grow and explore, who comes to learn.
We bid you welcome, who enter this hall as a homecoming.
Who have found here room for your spirit, who find in this people a family.
Whoever you are, whatever you are, wherever you are on your journey, we bid you welcome. As noted in the order of service, this is a sacred time where we invite all to share great joys or profound sorrows with the congregation.
Let there be a quiet time among us. Spirit of life, in us and around us, here is our chance once again to live like we wish the world would live. May we find within ourselves the courage to be who we are. May we know when it is time to listen and when it is time to speak. May we trust ourselves to be the ones to find the words that need to be said or to do what needs to be done. May we trust one another and know there are many ways to go through life. May we know that though we cannot change some of what life gives to us, we can choose how we deal with what we are given. We are all connected. We depend upon one another more than we know. So be it. Our centering hymn is number one in the hymnal, and you may remain seated. So again, this service comes from the Church of the Larger Fellowship, and was written by Dr. Tony Larson, and he's actually a minister at Olympia Brown Church in Racine, I believe, and I think Laurie knows him very well. So in this service, or in the sermon here, when you hear the first person spoken, of course, that's Dr. Larson, not me. It's called tables. Many important things happen around tables. Some of our most important conversations take place there. Maybe it was a restaurant table at which you proposed marriage to the person with whom you are now spending your life. Or it's the dinner table over which you tell someone you love night after night about the things that have gone well that day and the things that haven't. Perhaps it's a coffee table around which you've shared stories and jokes with your friends. And consider the wider world. We have the bargaining table at which opposing sides sit down to work out their differences. We have round tables, which are discussions on important issues in the world around a circular table. Then there's the peace table, which brings enemy nations together who agree to stop fighting and killing one another. When Yasser Arafat and Yitzhak Rabin came to Washington to pledge their peace agreement, President Clinton had the special historic desk from the treaty room brought out for the signing. It was the same table that Begin and Sadat had signed on years before. During the negotiations to end the Vietnam War, the North Vietnamese argued over the shape of the table, and they finally agreed on a round one so no one would appear to be superior. Then there are tables at home. In your own home, the table is also an instrument to unite people. Perhaps it's the breakfast table that serves as a meeting place from which you and the people you care about express your hopes for the day and get ready to face the world. And at Thanksgiving and other special holidays, you spend a long time at the table, longer than you need to. You've eaten all the turkey you can handle. You could easily get up and go to a living room, or even all of you leave together and go your separate ways. But something keeps you at that table, dirty dishes and all. I've seen it happen. You don't want to leave it because you know inside that a table is an altar of sorts. Holy things can happen there. They've happened before. One of our church members told me how she cut out her first dress on the kitchen table while her mother was making dinner. Another said that the table is where his family discussions occur. It's where homework is done or games are played, where letters are written or artwork created. Secrets have been told, burdens have been lifted, words of forgiveness have been said. All across a table. Hands have reached across and around, feet have touched underneath, laughter has erupted all around, and tears have fallen on top of the table. Oh, the stories your kitchen table could tell, the things it has witnessed. You don't think about it usually, but the table is probably the holiest place in your house. And you know, when someone gets sick or has a death in the family, we often go to their house with a casserole. It's not so much that we think they can't cook anymore or can't order out, but a meal is our way of saying, I'm sorry, and I wish I could take the pain away, and I wish I had the right words to say, but I can't and I don't, so please accept this casserole, and they understand. When Craig and I moved into our new house a couple of years ago, one of you did something rather interesting. You made a full supper for us and brought it over at the end of the day for our table, and it was delicious. And we could have ordered pizza or gone out to eat, but this special dinner was such a gift and conveyed so much more than just food that we've never forgotten it. In ancient times, a meal was a symbol of friendship. We shake hands now to signify welcome, but in ancient times you usually did it with a meal. Only friends could share a meal together, so if you invited a stranger to your table, that was in effect making them your friend. To eat food with someone was an act of welcome. Even today it is, when you think about it. When I go to someone's house to visit, they almost always ask me if I'd like something to eat or drink. It's not because they think I'm hungry or thirsty after a long day out in the fields or something like that. It's because offering something to eat, eating something together, even if it's a cracker or a cup of tea, is a symbol of welcome. It's always been. If someone comes into your home and they leave without touching anything, then when they've gone, you have no concrete sign that they were there. If there are cookie crumbs on your coffee table, or a missing brownie or two, maybe a little less coffee or soda than there had been before, then your home's been changed just a little bit. And your visitor has changed too, because something you gave has gone inside them, has become part of their body. Something from you has become part of them. The food and drink are offered as symbols. They are not given so much to satisfy our hunger as to cement our friendship. This was also true thousands of years ago, because ancient people knew that offering food was how you made friends with others. They would build altars, which were really tables, altars for the gods. And they would offer food on the tables, knowing that to sit at their goddess's table was to be their goddess's friend. Most religions around the world still include food in their rituals. Shintoists offer fruit and vegetables to the kami. Buddhists put a bowl of rice before the statue of Gautama. Sikhs share a special pudding in their temples. Jews ask God to bless bread and wine every Friday night. In our congregation, we have shared coconuts in the Jain tradition and Hindu sweets for Diwali. And in LCUUC's tradition, we've shared many Thanksgivings together. In the early Christian church, people came together for a meal to remember Jesus. By the middle of the second century, they were no longer eating a whole meal, but just sharing a piece of bread and a sip of wine with readings and prayers and a sermon. And eventually, they were only allowed to eat the bread. Only the priest could drink the wine. And then the bread became smaller and smaller until it became a flat, tasteless disc. By the Middle Ages, most people didn't feel worthy to eat even that. Also, the wooden tables that had been used originally for the meal were replaced with stone altars, which were moved farther and farther from the people until they were separated by steps and a railing and even faced the wall, so the priest's back was to the people. The mass became something to watch, not participate in. But in the beginning, Christians came together for a whole meal. In Paul's first letter to the Corinthians, chapter 11, verses 27 through 22, he complained about what he had heard about these dinners. So this is Paul. In the following instructions, I do not commend you, because when you come together, it is not for the better, but for the worse. For in the first place, when you assemble as a church, I hear that there are divisions among you. When you meet together, it is not the Lord's Supper that you eat. For in eating, each one goes ahead with his own meal, and one is hungry and another is drunk. What? Do you despise the church of God and humiliate those who have nothing? What shall I say to you? Shall I commend you in this? No, I will not. Apparently, in the early church, and this is early because the first book of Corinthians was written around the year 50 CE, or about 20 years after Jesus died, when Christians gathered to remember Jesus with a whole meal, the people who were wealthy would bring a lot of food and then not share it with their poorer brothers and sisters. Not only that, they'd get intoxicated on the wine. That's what he's getting at in there. So this disturbed Paul, and rightly so, because it was supposed to be a meal of unity. Everyone brings food, everyone shares. Not, I bring my food for myself. If you don't have enough, too bad. You see, the original celebrations of the Lord's Supper, the original communion services, were potluck dinners. Our church's dinner circles are closer to those early gatherings than our Sunday services. And Paul wanted them to be truly potluck dinners, not just a bunch of people coming together to eat alone. Now, it shouldn't surprise us too much that the early Christian services were meals. After all, the Last Supper was undoubtedly a Passover meal. And we know from the Gospels that Jesus had many meals with the disciples. So having a meal in Jesus' memory was probably a good way to keep him alive in their hearts. But I must admit, I don't usually think of Jesus that way. I think of him as lecturing the multitudes, or healing the lepers, or telling wise parables. I don't think of him as saying, "Hey Peter, would you pass the bread and butter this way?" Or, "Great fish tonight, John." But he probably said these things. And he probably revealed who he was as a human being over a table with his friends. That's where he expressed his hopes and probably also his doubts. It's over a table that we usually get to know someone best, and that's why I think the communion table is an important piece of furniture to keep in our church. In this case, I don't know if our up here would be a kind of our communion table, or we may have some opportunity to do something different. But I know there are people who think, how can we have communion in this UU church? Most of us don't believe that Jesus was God. And we certainly don't believe that bread and wine can be magically changed into someone's body and blood. So why don't we get rid of this table or haul it off to the attic to store along with our other historical artifacts, relics of the past but no longer relevant? Well, let me tell you something. I grew up Catholic, as some of you did. When I made my first communion, I understood that the wafer, host, was actually the body of Christ. And since I believed Christ was God, I knew that when I received the wafer, I was receiving God. Only the priest could touch the communion host. If a consecrated host fell on the floor, there was a special ceremony to purify the host and the floor. And there was even a special ceremony on First Fridays where the consecrated host was enshrined in a gold container that was lifted up before the people so we could worship it. This made communion a very vertical thing, something between the individual and God. There was no sense of community from that. Communion between me and God, not communion between me and you. So what started out as a community potluck dinner 2,000 years ago became a very private thing. And what has been a unity meal was no longer recognizable as such. Perhaps the greatest irony is that many churches today do not allow people who are not members to receive communion. Even so-called open communion churches often have a creedal test. If you believe such and such and accept this and that and have faith in this creed, we invite you to communion with us, they say. But in his own life, Jesus ate with everybody. In fact, he caused quite a scandal in doing so. This is from Mark chapter 2, verse 15 and 16. It says, "And as he sat at table, many tax collectors and sinners were sitting with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. And the scribes of the Pharisees, when they saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, said to his disciples, 'Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?'" But you see, part of Jesus' whole mission was to bring together the people that others cast off. He ate with open sinners because he had a vision of the realm of God as a great banquet that would be open to all who wanted to come. This was a wide open table. In my mind, that means black and white, rich and poor, gay and straight, even Hindu and Muslim, Buddhist and Jew, all are welcome at the table of unity. We need a big table in our world today, a table open to more than one religion, recognizing more than one path. We need to learn to become companions. Companion is an interesting word. It comes from two Greek words, kom, meaning with, and pan, meaning bread. A companion is literally someone you've had bread with. That's the original meaning of the word. When you share bread with a stranger, that stranger becomes a bread with person, a companion. So symbolically, that's what our big table means. Not only companionship with our friends and the people who know us well, but a willingness to risk getting to know those who seem different from us, people we may be reluctant to get to know. Then there's a closed table. Thought a lot about that when I read about a small town in Louisiana called Welsh. It seems there was a young man there that the town didn't want at their table. His name is John Broussard, a former Air Force medic. One day, John announced on local TV that he was gay and that he had HIV/AIDS. After that broadcast, his Baptist neighbors told him he was going to hell. Local doctors refused to treat him, and people threw rocks at his house. It wasn't only hard on him, but on his family too. "My parents," he said, "went through more rejection by friends in 1 year than they had ever in their entire lives." There was no welcome table there, quite the opposite. But John Broussard decided he would not let the unwelcoming response of his community determine his reaction to it. He started going into every store in town to talk with the sales clerks and the customers. Even when they ignored him, he wouldn't give up. He also started giving talks at his junior high school about HIV/AIDS. And eventually, people began to come around. Kids started listening to his talks, so did some of their parents. People who used to avoid him began to come up and ask how he was doing, what could they do to help. A doctor in a nearby town said he'd try to learn what he could about HIV/AIDS so he could give him medical help. Seventh and eighth graders wrote him letters saying they wouldn't tell anti-gay jokes anymore because now they had a friend who was gay. So sometimes a closed table can become an open one. And one of the reasons I wanted to talk about tables and communion is that the world is getting smaller. That's a cliche, of course. Everyone says that. But although the world is getting smaller, we're not getting closer. You'd think we'd be closer if the world's getting smaller. It's almost the opposite. So we don't seem to understand each other better. We're more aware now of what's going on around us, but we're not necessarily more compassionate or understanding as a result. When something happens in one part of the world, we see it flashed instantly on our TV screens, but the people involved are not really at table with us. We keep them out as best we can. Tables can remind us that seeing and hearing, no matter how instantaneously, is not the same as responding with our hearts. And they also remind us that when others close themselves off, as the people of Welsh Louisiana did originally with John Broussard, we don't have to accept that. We can try to change their hearts. When they exclude us from their table, we can still invite them to our own. They will not always accept our invitation. But we will know we made the offer, and that will be enough for an open table. So now our hymn is number 407. So please join us and stand as you're willing and able. Looks like we have plenty of time for a polylog. If anybody has any of their own thoughts they want to share, insights, or anything pertaining to Tony Larson's sermon this morning, anything regarding our church's table or your own tables and experiences or things that have happened that.
Yes, I have a comment. Thank you for the new perspective about our dining room table. I'm Susan right here. I usually see it as a big mess of homework and bills and things that I have to clear off if company comes over. So now I have a new perspective about it.
Tables are where things get done.
I have a story about our own table. Before we started coming to this church, we used to have Sunday brunch at our house. There were two or three families that were very close friends who would come, and then two of my siblings' families would always come. So we usually start around 10, like most churches would, end around between 11, 11:30. Then we move into another room, have coffee, and invariably one of the kids would have something to sell, so we were always doing fundraisers as well. Well, about a year ago, families started moving away, people joined churches, and so we came to this table, so.
I've often used that analogy as a way to describe what Unitarianism is about. It's just everybody's welcome at the table if they think they're, you know, they can sit at our table, because some think they can't. That's their choice.
It was a real treat for me to hear Tony's words because I'm thinking of him today. And did it say in the materials from the Church of the Larger Fellowship whether this was one of his communion sermons?
Because I didn't see that anywhere, but
it sure sounds like one. They do communion at Olympia Brown 4 times a year, and they'll probably do it next weekend. I think next weekend is World Communion Sunday. And communion has always been done at that church 4 times a year because it was originally a Universalist church. I think it's really important for us to remember those Christian roots. No, we're not all Christian, but we still, as Paul brought up so beautifully with the story, we are still connected in communion with our Christian brothers and sisters, as well as our Buddhist brothers and sisters and Jewish brothers and sisters. It's just such a wonderful thing and a wonderful thing to remember. And thanks, John.
Thanks. Yeah, I didn't grow up Catholic as Dr. Larson did, but you know, I understand about the body of Christ and the wine for the blood of Christ, but I never really thought about tables and sharing the food that brings people together so well. So I thought it was a kind of an enlightening sermon.
I'm Robin, and I'd like to rejoice about the biggest table in the world, and that's around the UN. And there's hopeful news that nuclear proliferation might be on the way out. And this is good news for the world.
Yeah, the UN, we've got to all keep talking, right?
I'm Yvonne, and for our visitors, we do have a couple communion rituals at our church, and that is the water communion when we get back together in the fall, and then in the spring, just before we depart for the summer, we have a flower communion. And while not, food is not involved in those, it is our tradition to have that form of communion.
I'm Anita, and I just wanted to say that this is kind of ironic. We were talking about how people come together and how my generation and, you know, some generations to come are more plugged in. You know, we are talking on the phone. We're less of person-to-person talking, you know. When I get together with my friend, it's actually getting together online and talking. So we were talking about this actually in the salon and how it's becoming more and more where we're talking, you know, via the internet, cell phones, texting instead of talking to someone, and how it's less and less where we're trying to get together, and how that's kind of missing in our, you know, in my generation and some generations to come. So.
Yeah, it reminds me of my own former job where my project involved people in 5 different locations, and it was because that's where resources were, and really it's not as effective as having the entire team in one location, in one room, close where people can see each other, talk to each other, everything face-to-face. It's not quite the same, you know, in live meetings and internet conferences and that type of thing. So the internet and all the electronic marvels, you know, they allow us to communicate better, but really it's not this, nothing can beat the face-to-face. There's nothing as close a communication as a face-to-face communication. There's no missed interpretations from written words.
Related to that, you know, think of the culture we live in and fast food and how we've kind of lost that connection, or where we risk it. I'm Eric. I was thinking of cooperating congregations of Waukesha County, a group of churches and individuals working together to deal with a lot of poverty issues and other issues. But I'm on the board of that organization and thinking about our soup kitchen, where we stand and we serve the meals, but we don't really sit down at a table. And I sort of wish that provoked that thought of if we're going to be an open table, maybe it shouldn't be us and them, it should be all of us at the table.
My name is Jane Espenson, and I'm the new minister of this congregation, but what I wanted to say as I'm sitting here listening to this, many, many, many thoughts came to my head, but one of the things is that there have been dinners given to meet me and for me to meet everybody else. But what has happened in those dinners or those gatherings is not just going around the table saying who we are and what we do and kind of hello. It has been really opened up to people sharing their lives and their pasts, and really very profound and moving things have been discussed unexpectedly that have to do not only with this congregation but with each other. And so these have been more than, oh, now I know somebody's face and name, but I really have a sense that I know more about you. And I think that what's happening is that you're all becoming, knowing more about each other. And it is because we gathered around a table or, you know, a little trunk, but we saw each other's faces. And so this was very meaningful to me to listen to this.
I'm Jerry. This must be a tough act to follow. But, you know, we do have our coffee every Sunday after church service where we share our fairly traded coffee and snacks and juice for the kids. And isn't that really a communion?
Yeah,
we're doing it every Sunday, and we should think of it that way.
Hi, I'm Dan, and one thing that I thought of is often when you're going to sit down or when you're going to talk to people about something important, we tend to say, let's sit down and talk about it. And I often thought that was a silly thing to say because, of course, you would sit down. But I guess as we think about the information age and how that isn't happening as much anymore, kind of brings new significance to let's sit down and talk about it.
My name is Esther. And one thing that was forgotten here is that we do every year have Thanksgiving together. Everybody brings a little, signs up for something to bring. And no matter what you bring, we all sit down and somebody organizes this whole thing. And it's amazing. It's always the Sunday before Thanksgiving. And I think we all look forward to that, although Jerry and I will not be here this year for that. But I think that'll probably be the first time we will have missed. But for everyone else, that will continue.
Hi, I'm Leanne, and I just wanted to make note of some other mini tables that nobody's brought up yet, and that is you talked about when somebody's not feeling well and you bring a meal over, but when my daughter's not well, I actually set up a little, what we call a TV tray, right by her bed. It's the first thing I do, and I put there everything she will need while she's not feeling well, including food. And also when we have visitors over and we're sitting around in the living room, we set up those same little TV trays to make sure that they can eat the food and be comfortable. And also all you mothers out there probably are familiar with what one of my favorite is, the breakfast in bed on Mother's Day. It's a wonderful ritual.
Well, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts on tables. Our closing words actually come from our hymnal, and they go as follows. This is the mission of our faith, to teach the fragile art of hospitality, to revere both the critical mind and the generous heart, to prove that diversity need not mean divisiveness. And to witness to all of that, we must hold the whole world in our hands. Amen.